straight up at 8 o'clock. And it's time now for the WealthWise moment. We welcome Laureen Gilbert, President and CEO of WealthWise Financial. We're going to talk about all things economy related this morning. Laureen Gilbert, welcome to the program today.
Thank you. Good morning, Ed.
How do you like that little fiery entry there? Pretty good?
Love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for spending time with us this morning. There's so many important things to discuss. As you and I talked last week, the relief aid negotiations going on in Washington right now, it doesn't appear that they're going to be coming to an agreement anytime here in the next couple of days. There are some moments of agreement. There are some things that they agree on: the stimulus check, maximum payment amount. That's good. The employee tax credit, they're agreeing on that. There's a couple of sticking items that are pretty important that it doesn't appear that they're going to agree with right away. Am I right?
You're right, Ed. And, you know, it's a matter of how much more do we spend and how is it spent? And, you know, my hope is that we get a real targeted approach on this round of stimulus, and whether it's $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion or $2 trillion, whatever it is, let's make sure that that money is being spent in appropriate manner so that the people who need those funds get it. And I was just reading a Goldman Sachs executive who focuses on urban development, discussing how there's still such a need for more PPP money, especially in areas that have been the hardest hit for those small businesses that are struggling. And while that money paid for, an 8-week period of time, we're now 20 weeks into this ordeal. And so you have a lot of small businesses really struggling.
Right. We were discussing the very first thing we talked about this morning was the new report that estimates that 41% of Black-owned businesses across the country shut down between February and April, where only 17% of white businesses shut down during that same period. So it is a matter of access to banks or access to capital, right?
It is in a lot of ways, and that's what I'm talking about. There are some communities that historically did not have the same access to capital, did not utilize the banking system as much. And those are some of the companies that have been the hardest hit. And there are programs out there to help those companies, but for them to know where to go to has been a struggle. And I think that's where some of this legislation can have directed money to those institutions like the CDFIs that help in areas that traditionally haven't had as much access to capital.
Right. Okay. And I'm sure, and you and I were talking off air, my gamble is that they'll still be discussing this into next week. So if possible, we'll have a direct comparison of each and every item next week. As I mentioned, there are several points that they agree on right now, just some things that they disagree with. For instance, liability protections or eviction protections, moratorium, or even the enhanced unemployment. But again, those are things that I'm sure that they'll be ironed out in the next week or so.
We sure hope so. I think all of us hope so, because that money needs to get out to the people.
Right, right. And I heard an interesting term this morning, and maybe you could explain it to me. Earning season. Is there an earning season, and are we in it right now?
We are in earning season, fully in earning season. And so what that means is we're looking at companies and how they did in the second quarter. So now that we're in the third quarter, we're evaluating Q2, and what you've had is companies that have come out with how they did in Q2, that's the second quarter, and we've had about 80% of the S&P 500 report. It's going better than expected, and the reason is the expectations that were set in the first quarter for the second quarter were so low that we've actually seen companies beating expectations because that bar was so very low. And so if we just look at the numbers, 85% of the companies that have reported in the S&P 500 have surprised us on the upside. And it's one of the strongest quarters for earnings surprises since the Great Recession. And so, and along with that, if we look at GDP, remember we talked about that last week,
right.
GDP's expectations were so low, and we actually beat that. I mean, it was still a horrible number for right. GDP growth, but it was better than as bad as we thought. So that's what we're seeing. It's better. And let me just contrast that on the other side of the coin, and that is that companies are going into bankruptcy more so than we saw in the Great Recession. So we're seeing some of the large companies doing better than we thought, and some of those companies that were highly levered doing worse than ever, more and more bankruptcies happening. So definitely a what I'd call a bifurcated market, with highly levered companies going into bankruptcy, doing poorly. Companies like those tech companies, or companies like that, like your big five companies that right. we talk about all the time, doing incredibly well.
Now, Apple reported reaching their highest all-time earnings. So is that gap going to continue to grow through the third quarter between those that have and those that don't?
Well, it depends on, you know, it's an interesting question, Ed, and it's an interesting question for investors to think about. Do you want to keep putting money into a very narrow market? Because that's where all the money's going. People are supporting very few companies by putting their investable dollars in those companies. Apple is going to be splitting, you know, and talking about, you know, what does that mean for Apple? So, you know, people tend to get excited when investors tend to get excited about a company about to split, thinking that's a good opportunity. So do you continue to put money into those companies? And by the way, give them more control over our lives in every way.
Right.
So something for investors to think about.
And I guess this is, with this subject, this is the dumb guy question. You've always told me that markets are always looking ahead. Is there an advantage at this point for the market to do kind of a post-mortem on the last quarter?
Well, we would have thought, you know, we would have thought that during this quarter, I thought, you know, we would see more volatility than we've seen. In other words, volatility to the downside. Right. And we saw a little bit of that last week. We took advantage of that, by the way. You know, looking for investors, I would say, look for the dips, look for the opportunities in the market. When the market gets spooked, like it did last week on the GDP numbers, those are opportunities to buy the companies that you've been looking at.
Okay.
But, you know, I would say, you know, my expectation is that we've probably seen the worst as far as the economic numbers. And so with that, start to look ahead to what I call the recovery, you know, when we are recovering. So definitely look ahead.
Always a ray of sunshine. I love that. Thank you. So expecting a demand for fossil fuels to fall by 75% over the next 30 years and an increase in global temperatures, BP is changing their business plan. BP, the ones who ruined the Gulf a few years ago with the oil spill, they completely changed their business plan and they're going green energy. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, they've come up with a plan for themselves and how they can go get to net zero by the year 2050 or sooner.
Right.
And they're also putting together a plan of how they can be advocates for the, you know, really the world to also get to, you know, zero as far as, you know, emissions are concerned and all the green. They put together a green policy.
Right.
And what you're seeing is more and more companies, I mean, Amazon has their targets, you know, BP, all these companies are setting their targets to be good citizens because they know that people are watching and that people are interested and that people won't support a business unless they start thinking about being green.
So here in 2020, is it fair to say that they're changing to compete for the second half of this century?
I think that's a good way of saying it. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I think they're looking at their own viability, right? They have struggled. It's a company that has struggled. And you mentioned, you know, their mishaps, and they've been struggling. And so they're hoping that this green approach is going to lure in investors and people that may have shunned them in the past.
Okay. All right. Because they've already cut their petrochemicals unit. They announced plans to cut 10,000 jobs. And of course, obviously, the crash in oil prices has affected all the oil companies, and they're not immune to that. Let's talk about the big merger, Sprint and T-Mobile. Mm-hmm. Now, we know Sprint has had, they had just the greatest plan. When I first heard of Sprint, I thought, wow, this is going to be great. But they've made some missteps. Is it bad management or bad luck?
Well, you always have to look to the top when it comes to corporations who set the tone and set the policy, set the vision for a company. What's really sad is this is a company that has been around 120 years and is going bye-bye. The name will no longer exist. T-Mobile has taken over. It's a $26 billion deal. And I think it is something for companies to think about. What is their, you know, how are they going to maintain their legacy? How are they going to continue on? And yes, they made a number of missteps that ended up compromising the company to such an extent that they had to merge.
Right. They rode the WiMAX horse, which is really the Betamax of 4G. So I think that was a huge mistake. Let's talk about Kodak for a second. Last week, you and I discussed that Kodak received over $700 million in a government loan that they have to pay back over the next 25 years, mm-hmm. right? And Kodak shot through the roof. Their shares are still up almost 500%, 470% over the past five trading sessions. And my question is the government picking winners with, and is Boeing in the same position really, because they get government military contracts, but is the government picking winners in the market?
Well, they would be picking winners in the market if they purchase the stock, and that's what I've been against. But giving a company a loan is a different story. So I don't think that they are picking winners by giving a loan. That's something that has to be paid back over the next 30 years. So I wouldn't say they're doing that. I think what's the story that's interesting this week is whether there was insider trading going on, because the shares started to shoot up before the announcement was made. And I do agree that that needs to be looked at. The SEC is investigating if there was insider trading, who did it, what was involved. And that's absolutely illegal and wrong, and we can't have insider trading. It will, you know, it will destroy our market. So we have to look into that. But I'm not at all against the loan, because it's a loan that's paid back. And, you know, as we discussed last week, it's going to help us in the United States start producing drugs and all those good things. So I don't think the government's picking winners in that way. Okay. But I'm hopeful that the government does not start buying stock.
Okay. Can I have your indulgence while I give you my street view? As if this were on the street and you loan them $750, and they let it ride and they go gambling with that $750 that you loaned them, and they happen to make some money off of that, they're earning off of your loan. So without paying back a vig at any point, if you will, if you pardon the Sopranos terminology there, but without really paying anything back, they're earning off that loan. So it's kind of the same thing. No? Is that the dumb guy view?
No. So let's bring it down to every day. So let's bring it down. Let's talk about the PPP loans.
Right.
Bring it down to small business.
Okay.
PPP or you know, the EIDL loan. So people received a loan. Let's just call it that, the loan, not the grant. But let's call it a loan for their small business. And they have to pay it back with interest, albeit at a low interest rate, which is helpful, but they have to pay that loan back. And they're able to use that loan to sustain their business and grow, and by the way, be profitable. Nobody's in the, you know, unless you're a nonprofit, you're looking for profit.
Right.
So companies need to make money. They need to make money to pay their employees. They need to make money to pay their vendors. They need to make money to pay back a loan. They need to make money to be profitable so that they can sustain themselves. And the problem is, if they're not profitable, they'll go out of business. So, you know, back to the idea between Sprint and T-Mobile, Sprint is the loser, T-Mobile is the winner, and Sprint, you know, wasn't able to sustain their profitability.
Right.
So loans are very important, whether it comes from the government or whether it comes from a bank. For a business to grow and scale, it usually means taking a loan.
Okay. Thank you. Again, clarity that I love each and every week. I did read a really fascinating paper, and guess who authored it? It was you. Life insurance and charitable donations and combining the two. Explain to us what you were talking about.
So, you know, Americans are very generous people. Americans want to donate to charity, but they also want to do it in the most cost-effective way that they can. And so the government gives us, the IRS gives us an advantage here in the States in that we can take a tax deduction for our charitable donation. That's not true everywhere around the world. And in fact, just for your listeners to know, there this year only in 2020, part of the CARES Act was to allow up to 100% of AGI to be donated to a charity, whereas before it was 60%. So if you make $50,000, you could actually donate $50,000 and take it as a write-off. So that's a side note. But when it comes to life insurance or and donations, if you think about buying life insurance, you're paying pennies on the dollar for that policy. And so many people, as they're thinking about their legacy planning and what happens after they die, they think about their own beneficiaries, like their family, and they also think about the charities that they love. And one way to leverage your dollars is using life insurance as a way to give to charity upon death. And so you could buy a specific policy that is for that charity, or you could designate part of your existing life insurance policy to go to charity, and it goes to them tax-free. And it's out of your, you know, you're donating that money out. So that is done very effectively. There are other ways to do it where you actually get a tax deduction, income tax deduction, that is. And that's if you give the policy to the charity during your lifetime and you fund it still. And so those premiums can become tax deductible. There are also more advanced strategies like a charitable remainder trust that allow you to set up a trust where the income stream goes to you. And at the end of your life, when you pass away, the corpus of that trust goes to charity. And oftentimes people use life insurance as a way to replace that asset for beneficiaries. So there's a lot of good uses of life insurance to leverage money that ends up going to charity.
I can actually see the light bulbs going off across all our listeners' heads right now. That's fantastic. Laureen, how do we contact you at WealthWise Financial Services?
So WealthWiseFinancial.com or 949-748-1177.
She is the president and CEO of WealthWise Financial Services. This has been our WealthWise moment. Laureen Gilbert, I can't thank you enough for being here twice this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
All right. It's the Mornings with Ed Show, 8:28 the time. Glad you're here. Coming up at 9 o'clock.